Chapter 14. Zara. The natives make their way through the hills at a hurried pace, the wheels of the rock-filled wagon bumping across the uneven terrain. No beasts of burden pull the unconventional load. The slaves do it themselves, a half dozen of them yoked like animals to the front, hauling it along. Many of them cast their eyes about nervously, searching the desolate landscape for signs of danger as the sky grows darker. The young boy, with his wide dark eyes and his tangled mess of hair, insists on pulling me along by the hand, shooting encouraging smiles at me every so often as we trudge along beside the wagon. Owen strides next to us, his hand warily clutching his curved quill dagger.
"I don't like this, Zara," he mumbles, just loud enough for me to hear. "What if these people are leading us into danger?"
I give him a questioning look. "Aren't you the least bit curious about who these people are?"
"I'm more interested in keeping us from getting killed," he replies tersely.
I pause, considering for a moment before answering his original question. "I don't think these people mean to do us harm. They appear to be slaves of some kind. Just look at them. They're scared to death. We're probably the first outsiders they've ever seen."
Owen frowns. "That's just it, Zara. If these people are slaves, then who are their slavers?"
"Now that's a good question," I think, wondering who or what could be their master. "Demons, maybe? Light. There could be an entire civilization out here that we never even knew about." As I ponder the implications, a new thought suddenly strikes me. These people must be the remnants of those who were trapped outside when the Ark of Radiance was created. Perhaps they were refugees, fleeing the destruction of their native lands. New ideas start to spring up in my mind like mushrooms after a forest rainstorm. "That must be why we can't understand them. Their language has been corrupted. It only makes sense. They've been living in isolation out here for over 1,000 years. Perhaps they have been serving the R'hllar this entire time. Perhaps they've adopted the language of the demons themselves." My thoughts begin moving quickly, spinning inside my head like a windmill on a blustery day. What does 1,000 years of servitude do to a society? What remains of their humanity after so long without freedom? The horror of their situation makes a part of me feel ill, but the scholar in me can't help but be fascinated by this new information. We continue silently through the hills, eventually coming out onto a wide plain, right as the sun sinks beneath the horizon. There, just outside of the undulating, rocky hills, is a sort of encampment spread out like a town or village. It's comprised mainly of primitive tents, made from rough lengths of wood and the skins of animals. Bonfires burn at various places within its borders, causing the entire area to glow with an orange light. Our caravan heads directly to the center of the encampment, pausing only to deposit the wagon near a massive pile of stones on the outside edge of the tents. Set up around the stones are what appear to be workstations, covered with a wide variety of hammers and other tools. Even in the darkness, I can see several huddled figures cracking open the rocks, chiseling them, and sorting them into piles. Almost everyone stops and stares at us as we make our way through the camp, their expressions ranging from curiosity to outright terror. Several people run in the opposite direction, and mothers usher their children away, as if our mere presence is a danger to them. Taking it all in curiously, I allow the youth to continue pulling me forward, following the group toward the middle of the tent village.
"There's got to be hundreds of them," Owen mutters, sounding more than a little concerned. "Maybe even thousands. Could there be more of these tribes living out here?"
His question, of course, raises even more questions inside my mind. We stop before a large open tent,
ringed by 6 sizable fires, its flaps opened wide and revealing a cluster of people sitting on the ground within. Those surrounding us bow their heads reverently as we approach, then stop just before the entrance. The youth lets go of my hand, and someone behind us pushes Owen and me forward, giving us a closer look of the people inside. Each of the 6 individuals is elderly, with leathery, sun-darkened skin and stark white hair. They wear the same collars and humble clothing as everyone else in the slave camp, but carry themselves with distinction, the weight of responsibility apparent in their wizened gazes. "These must be the tribal elders," I realize, grabbing Owen by the arm and whispering that we should kneel before them. He does so grudgingly, never letting go of his makeshift dagger. One of the elders, an old woman wearing a plain dress, stands up and shuffles forward, looking us over with dark, glittering eyes. She speaks to me in their language, her voice like the crumbling of dried leaves. The man who argued with the boy in the hills steps forward, his head bowed low in deference. He speaks a few words to her, his tone respectful. Looking defiant, the boy comes to stand beside the man I assume to be his father, and another argument ensues. Owen and I glance at each other as the 3 go back and forth in their strange language, a few of the other elders chiming in here and there. Based on their gestures and vocal inflections, they sound like they're discussing what to do with us, the tense exchange growing more heated by the second. Perhaps Owen was right, I think, nervously catching glimpses of the hostile looks coming from some of the slaves gathered around us. Maybe it was a mistake for us to come here. Finally, they seem to reach some sort of resolution, and the boy and his father step back to stand behind us. The old woman, looking none too pleased, raises a withered hand into the air, indicating that everyone gathered around should be silent. She declares something in a loud voice, her rasping words carrying over the crowd. This appears to have an adverse reaction among the onlookers, many of them turning away from the elders and grumbling under their breath. The boy, however, smiles broadly, rushing up to me and taking hold of my hand once more. Chattering excitedly, he leads me away, the untrusting gaze of the old woman following me as I turn from the open tent. "I guess we're following him now," I say to Owen, who falls into step behind me. "I think this is a good sign, don't you?" He grunts but doesn't reply, his movements tense like a coiled spring. The boy leads us away from the elders, guiding us through the camp to one of the bonfires near the edge of the plains. I can feel the eyes of everyone on us as we go, staring apprehensively like we're an entirely different species. When we reach the fire, the youth motions for us to sit down on a woven mat on the ground. Still smiling, he plops down beside us. The crowd, which had been following us, disperses, leaving us alone before the crackling flames. Oddly, those who remain seem to be the youngest members of the encampment, children and teenagers who regard us with looks of astonishment and even excitement. A girl, probably no more than 10 years old, sidles up to me, her young face smeared with dirt and her hazel eyes wide with amazement. She reaches forward tentatively and touches my robes, feeling the blue fabric between her fingers the way a child might feel the downy fur of a kitten for the first time. When I look over at Owen, I see that he's receiving similar treatment. A small crowd of boys, ranging from about the ages of 8 to 15, gather around him, examining his leather armor and cloak, and whispering to each other quietly. One of them pokes the demon quill he's holding, then yelps and pulls back, eliciting giggles from the others around him. The long-haired youth, the one who seemingly pled our case before the elders, shooes the others away and calls out to someone on the other side of the fire. Within a few moments, steaming bowls of food are brought over and placed by our feet on the ground. The boy gestures to the bowls and smiles, bringing his hand up to his mouth and miming the act of chewing. Owen eyes the bowls uncertainly, but I reach forward and pick one up, not wanting to offend them. It smells like boiled barley, with a hint of something pungent that I can't quite identify. Using my index finger and thumb, I pick up a bit of the food and bring it to my lips. The native youths, who had not gone far, nod encouragingly. Steeling myself, I place the brownish mash into my mouth and chew, trying not to gag at the strange bitter taste. After swallowing, I look at the boy and smile. "It's very good. Thank you." His grin grows even wider. Owen sniffs his own bowl and grimaces, but starts eating as well, without complaint. I only manage to eat half of the stuff before setting the bowl aside. The gathered youths never take their eyes off us. They whisper in their alien language and sometimes even laugh, pointing at everything from our clothes to our skin and hair. They don't seem hostile, merely curious, as if they've never encountered strangers before. Owen and I look much different than these people. Our clothing, though dirty, is made from quality material, and our skin is extremely fair. Generations of living in this harsh environment have made them darker, and their culture seems much more primitive than that of any of the inhabitants of Tarsinium, their entire society having become impoverished due to their apparent subjugation. "At least they're friendly," I offer, glancing at Owen. He still seems uneasy at having come here in the first place.
"They were in those hills gathering those rocks for a reason," he says in a low voice. "And did you see their skin? Many of them have scars from whiplashes. These people are slaves, but where are their masters?"
Sure enough, many of the children surrounding us have dozens of pale scars marring their bodies. Seeing them makes my heart ache. Turning back to Owen, I reply softly, "I don't know." Suddenly, several of the youths stand, turning their attention to the vast plains beyond the encampment. Then, as if on a hidden cue, they run into the maze of tents, shouting in alarm. Confused, Owen and I get to our feet and look beyond the fire, trying to see what caused them to be so alarmed. At first I don't see anything, just miles of desert stretching on into blackness. But after a moment, I make out what caught their attention. Green lights, glowing like infernal flames.
"Light! It's the R'lar," I say,
grasping for my talisman that isn't there.
"The R'lar! They're coming!"